As of enlightenment, my custom here is to invite our guests, and to, once they come, to acknowledge that I know they're coming with several things very expensive in my eyes, time. Time is one of the most precious commodity offered to mankind. It's such a beautiful thing that we each have 24 hours, so we cannot say this person has more than that. And so what you do with time, how you respect and honor time, will tell us a lot about who you are. Other is the journey. The journey has creative power. Why? Because it has created the individual, Sarah, before us. And so we want to thank her for coming and spending both of these quality, I call it commodities, with us here at Threads of Enlightenment. Sarah, thank you so much for coming.
And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here today.
It's an honor. One of the things that I tell people that everyone that presents is a servant, but it is a creative servant. That servant created their current state that they're in. How do you serve mankind? Because I ask that question, Sarah, because I always want people to know it's bigger than just them. Sure. You need to step out of just us and realize that there is a dependent, of course, the journey, but there's also an interdependence of working with each other. How do you serve mankind?
The healing process, when we access it at the deepest level, in healing each other, in healing ourselves, everything is healed. When we go to a place of the deepest susceptibility and healing from the deepest susceptibility, everything shifts. It's the whole, one of the things that I've recognized is that if we imagine that we're all in this matrix and together, as if it were like a, you know, plasma matrix. And when any part of that finds a higher level of access to what in the language of homeopathy we call the ability of the vital force to rule with unbounded sway, that whole thing expands. It is, there's no level of work that's too small to change everything. And I've watched it go up the hereditary chain, so that somebody is struggling with something, and as they heal that in themselves, they see even in the generations before them, they feel a shift, that something has happened. So I think that it's always the macrocosm, but we use the individual language of the vital force of the person sitting in front of us asking for healing in order to access that little thread that is part of that tapestry. It heals on all those levels.
I agree 100%. We call that goo, if you will, the universe, and we're all a part of it. Material, the all of it. If you go to a quantum level, I'm one with the everything. When you look at it that way, that when one heals, whole plasma feels it. You can see that also. Meditation. I've seen meditation where you had group meditation, hundreds of people meditating about a situation hundreds of miles away, thousands of miles away, and is able to affect that situation because of that particular power. And we are all part of it, if you will. And it's a shame that most of us don't recognize that. One of our customs here, Sarah, is to, we go back in that time machine, as I mentioned to you, we call it memory, and we go to that first space that we visit for a short time. We call that the family. In that space, things happen to us there that cause you and I to make certain decisions that will guide our lives for several years. So we like to have a conversation to discover what that thread is, if you will, because the name of the show is Threads of Enlightenment. Introduce us to your family, and what was that unit like once you you visited there and you were residing there for those time stamp that we call years?
Yeah. So I grew up in New Hampshire in the northeast of the United States, a little bit north of Boston. And I have a sister. My parents are married. I grew up in a small city. It's more like a big town. And everything was fine. I was comfortable. I was loved. But I think that at that time, I was inside of a lot of other people's stories about what my life was supposed to look like. And of course, those stories were very much coming from the stories that my parents had about what their lives were supposed to look like. And it took me a really long time from childhood, I would say, well, through the crisis of having leukemia in my 30s, to find out that even though everything was fine, I was trucking along on a path that was taking me further and further from my purpose here. And so there was a lot of process for me once I realized that, of anger and frustration and feeling like things had happened to me, before I moved through the place of recognizing that I was dancing that dance, that it was coming from me and through me and as me. And so now I embrace it. For a while, I thought, where does this alien landscape I came from? I don't think that anymore.
I used to have some harsh words, beliefs, not harsh words, harsh beliefs that caused me to speak those words about who I am and what I am and so forth. And so I know some of the dynamics within the family of us. And I mentioned that to you. It turns out to be our superpower. It is the thing that formed us. And here you are in your family, trucking along, as you said. As you're trucking along in your family, Sarah, as a young individual, who is she relating to herself and the outside world, basically your friends, your family around you? What was that, those interactions were? And again, we're going back in that time machine of memory and kind of pulling out some of the threads that we can recollect from being in that space. What was your relationship to you and your relationship to the world from that space?
Well, I had a lot to say, and I had so much to say that it was really overwhelming for the people around me. And I think that I faced a lot of push and pull in the tension of wanting to find connection in a way that was outward moving, and that I was talking to people because I wanted to connect with them. And as I, that one of the amazing superpowers of that for me has been that I had to learn to be a listener, because I didn't start out as a listener. Mm-hmm. And that gave me the ability to become an expert listener. Mm-hmm. And then still also be good at talking. And so I think there were a lot of bumps along that path, but I really wanted always to see the deeper thing. I didn't understand how to be at the surface. I wasn't good at it. I wasn't adept at that. I really wanted that deeper connection always. So I was pushing for it, and trying to call it out all the time in a way that was not graceful. And I think the difficulty of that process has been so powerful for me, because I had to learn everything intentionally, because it wasn't easy for me.
I think it's the purpose of it, though, Sarah, because we all have glimpses. Remember, as a young man, I was a little different than all the others, and my siblings as well. And so we were the ones that will always push the envelope a little beyond what we are told, if you will, and just to see what's beyond that fence. That can always create some frictions within our authority, as far as parents and others that are outside of us, you know. And so it's a challenge to be able to manage it, because we ourselves don't have an understanding of why we are doing what we're doing, but we know that it's just a part of us. And so we can be irritating sometimes. I kind of get it. So here you are, you're moving through. Again, you have, you learn, you're saying you had a lot to say, and also the combination of a listener and one that speaks. You're moving through your life, Sarah, and you're going towards, let's say, college, and the family always have conversation as to what belief systems they have about where we should go and what profession we ought to be doing, because that's the best thing for us, as they say, you know, because they know what's best for us, as they say. So what was that conversation like, and which direction did you pick, and why did you pick that?
Yeah, so even as a very young child, I was fascinated by finance, because I thought that the world of finance was, because what I was fascinated by was these human interactions. Yeah. And I thought that the world of finance was this environment that was almost a laboratory for how human interactions work. Mm-hmm. And I had a single-minded focus on finance. And I went into finance. I worked as an equity analyst right out of college and was immediately miserable. I hated it because it wasn't any of that at all. It wasn't the thing that I was passionate about, which was how are people making the choices that they're making, and why, yeah, and what leads to these different directions. And so I had this complete crisis with it, left the industry entirely, went into horticulture for a few years, and then I had children, and then I stayed home with my babies, and then I got catastrophically sick for a while, and that's my story arc. But yeah, so I started out absolutely on the direction of I was going to go into finance, and this was going to be my life, and I was going to work on Wall Street in New York City, and that is not at all where I belonged, and it took me 25 years to figure that out.
How old were you, Sarah, when that belief jumped into you about finances? Do you remember how old you were, and what was it that caused that, you know, that desire to go there?
Yeah. So I remember being about 8 years old and watching, there was a TV show that my parents would watch on Friday nights, and it was called Wall Street Week with Louis Rukeyser. It was on public television in the US. I didn't really realize that the people on the show were actually actors. I was seeing this glamorous picture, and there were always these women who were self-possessed and in charge and glamorous, and they had this clarity and authority. And I saw this on the TV and I thought, this is all the things. Yeah. I can use my intelligence. I can use my insight. I can use my inquiry. I can use my analytical skills. I can use my big picture understanding of why people are doing what they're doing. And I can have this outward movement in the world of also some of this glamour. And so as an 8-year-old girl, that seemed like all the things. Yeah. And which it wasn't.
I love that, because it's really, and I have been on, within the last several months, I've been on this stream to educate people about the natural world will always push us to get a job. And that's why I usually ask this question, because the internal clock within us, that subconscious mind of us, is sitting there, but natural mind and part of our belief system based on whatever mom and dad and everyone is saying that we ought to be teachers and all that stuff, are pushing us towards the job. And which is fine. I love what you said, you know, and I tell people, this is how you distinguish if you are in the right place, if you're passionate about the job. Because if we weren't called here to do a job, Sarah, we were called here to complete and to do our assignment. One has an assignment. How we get to that assignment, that is called the journey, if you will, to discover what that assignment is. Because most and every single person that I've ever interviewed has either left their job to find their assignment. That's where the joy is. And I encourage those that are listening to us, are beginning or contemplating their journey. The journey is designed to come into your life, disrupt your life, and move you from your job to your assignment. Hang on. Designers have everything in plan, and you just need to learn some principles within there, but you'll get there. So Sarah, here you are. You are now chasing the job. You got there. You realize, hell no, This is not it. You're in your 20s, as you said. You got there and you realized that, hell no, because it's 8, 20, that's a long time to believe this. Mm-hmm. And now you have to center your belief that that's not it. How did you manage yourself in that space? Because that should be fun.
Yeah, I'm a lot contrarian by nature. And so when I'm told I have to do something, my first reaction is to go the other direction.
Yeah.
And what made it so easy for me to leave, at the time, just to leave the job, when I left my last job in finance, I didn't know that I was leaving the industry forever. I just knew that I was leaving that company. And it was, I had bought a house. So my husband and I, at the time, we had just bought this old farmhouse, and we had this romantic vision. We were going to have this old farmhouse, and this was going to be our life. And I was talking to one of my superiors in my company that I was working in, and I was feeling very frustrated because I felt like I had been really passed over for some professional advancement. And he said to me, he wasn't my hiring manager, and he said to me, he was a veteran of the industry though, and he said to me, well, they know you're trapped because you just bought this house, so they don't have to advance you because they know that you're not going to leave because you have to pay for that mortgage. And wow. I said to myself, I will not stay in any environment, company, industry that treats me that way. So that was actually a really easy decision. But when I left that job, I then had this idea that I would stay in the industry and I would find a better company. But when I went out to interview, it was, well, I can tell that you know from the way that you talk that when you are trying to put your square peg into a round hole, it doesn't resonate. You can't come across. So it was terrible. I would go out and try to have these interviews and it felt like cardboard. It felt like chewing cardboard.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I just don't belong here and I don't know what that means. And my husband at the time was able to pay our bills, but we were not affluent. I mean, it was work to pay those bills. We had definitely bought this house. And I said, okay, I'm just going to take this season off and see what happens when we get to where it starts to feel uncomfortable financially. And if I have to just go get a job, I'll go get a job. I did not have children at the time, and I actually don't even think I was married yet. We were just engaged. I just took that time off, and we rented out a guest house in this property that we'd owned to a friend. And I just spent the summer with her kind of doing nothing, being completely surrendered to this transformation. I had spent my whole life on a very type A path. I'd grown up in a town where there was a lot of affluence and career focus. I'd gone to a preparatory school. I had gone to college with this vision of my goals in life. And so it was really the first time in my whole life that I had completely let go of the idea that I was going somewhere. And it was actually wonderful. And then I thought, well, I'll just get a job at a plant nursery. And so initially, I just went to do something that felt different and fun and with my hands. The actual transformation from this was the path I'm on to what is the path I belong on started whatever that was, 23, 24, when I quit that job. I would say that I didn't complete that transformation until I was practicing as a homeopath in my early 40s.
It's never I tell people personal growth is not a sprint. Buckle no. up. Just it's life. It is life, period. And I try to make them aware that it's that way because you are such a incredible being that it'll take this lifetime and probably more to understand who you are. One of the things that I tell people, because we try to uncover the programmings, the traumas that we uncover, and we have some. I believe most of us, all of us have trauma. I believe that's the top layer of our trauma that we discover quickly, and even though it's painful, discover that. I believe we, here is a being coming into this plane. I believe we're coming with trauma. I believe that when we are in mom's womb, we're being traumatized there too, because mom and dad, based, because we are energy as well, based on their energetic relationship, what kind of arguments or whatever they're doing, and the culture between mom and dad, grandparents, the music, everything, that child is being programmed in that womb. And when that child comes out, not just the other trauma that we get from our relationship with mom and dad, from all of those other program traumas that are there residing that we don't know about, Sarah, until we start moving through life. And you get past one, you're like, and then something happened, and another will come, you're like, ooh, I didn't know that was there, but I see it. I sensed that it was there, but I didn't know. So here you are, Sarah. That's a big switch. Who had that time off, you and your friend? What are some of those conversations that you were having? Because here's a type A personality to be in that other space. I'm sure that was a little taxing in some degree because of your programming of that type A versus now you're just hanging out with your friends.
Yeah.
With your friend. That's metrically opposite programming.
Well, and what I discovered, and I think it took me a long time. I know that it took me a long time to put this into words, but what I discovered is that I am not type A at all. And so this whole, that way of being very fluid, very in process, very diffuse is much more in alignment with who I am. So in, it was just an incredible relief.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there was, I think, a little bit of underlying anxiety. And the nature of that anxiety was, is there something wrong with moving through the world this way?
Yeah.
Because nothing about the people I was raised by or the world I was raised in supported moving through life in this diffuse and fluid way.
Yeah.
That is much more who I am. I mean, really, my work is to take that and then channel it productively as opposed to forcing this armature onto everything, which is what I was trying to do. So
once
that's
you
what
get
it felt
there,
like.
Once you got there and you got this new job, as you stated, and that's a different mentality, it's a different approach to thinking. As you began to move in that space, what did you begin to notice happening to you, Sarah, as you are now switched from this type A that you're not, and you're now exploring this other aspect of yourself? You were there and you started your journey in that aspect. What did you notice about you playing it in the dirt, if you will, with all these different things?
One of the things that I noticed, so my experience at the time was of feeling there were certainly financial concerns. And so that was there. But at the same time, I felt much more in charge of myself. I was very clear that I was not going to submit to a dynamic where I felt like somebody was jerking me around and that I was going to be my own authority. The flip side of that, and I recognized this later, and it was a question of a maturity that I didn't have that I like to think I have now, but who knows, which was that I was also a terrible employee. And the way that I was a terrible employee was not that I didn't work hard. It wasn't that I didn't show up. It was that I was always challenging and second guessing and knowing better and not just throwing myself into how can I be my own best person in this place that I'm in and maximize the opportunity to be in service here. I was always focused on what can I fix? What can I fix? What can I fix? Everyone else isn't doing it right. What can I fix? And I know, and so I love that I went through that because it helped me realize something that I would have loved to have learned as a teenager, how to be fully present and fully in service and not just always challenging everyone all the time. But at the same time, that level of challenging has been really useful to me. And so now I've learned to integrate them. But at the time, it was a combination of loving a lot of aspects of the work, but then still being in my head all the time, trying to run the show all the time, being in conflict with authority all the time. And so I really connect with people who have trouble with authority because I get it. I totally get it. So that's kind of where I went with all of that.
I think the aspect of a teenager having the insight of being present, don't get it as a teenager.
Well, I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I didn't get
my
that
My kids seem to much more than I do, that's for sure.
I think because we kind of, since we are exposed to the personal development process and all that stuff, we kind of instill it into our kids. And they progress a little faster than us because I knew I was in my 40s and 50s when I didn't know anything about being present. And I was pouring everything I learned into my kids and they were in their teens and 20s and they came out so much better than I did.
And but, I guess that's the better purpose, right?
Yeah, like... I think that's the whole process and why. But here you are as you begin this new journey and you're moving through and you are still exhibiting some of the type A personality within that space as the job.
Absolutely.
And you're moving through that again. When you look back in that time frame and you're now out from there, per se, if you will, looking back, Sarah, what did you see yourself learning as an individual coming out, recognizing that, you know, you were applying brute force in a China shop, as they say.
Yeah. Well, later I came to understand that no matter where I went, I was going to be perpetuating the same pattern until I accessed the key in myself.
And how did you, Sarah, pardon me, how did you begin to recognize that being in debt? How did you, what was happening in your life that you started to begin to excavate that and recognize, wait a minute, I'm the common denominator here.
Well, it was when my first child was born. So my elder child, who just turned 18, when he was born, I was still working. At that time then, I was working at, I was doing both garden installation and some nursery work. So I was in that horticulture world in a couple of different places. And I had this idea that, well, this kind of work, this is great. I'm just going to put the baby on my back and I'm going to continue to work. I had a vision of what life was supposed to look like with a baby living in my crunchy rural. At this time now, I was in Maine, which is geographically almost the same as New Hampshire, where I grew up. And so I was just going to be doing my thing with the baby on my back. And I had this idea. And then I was always planning on homeschooling and having my children be at home. And it was all going to be totally integrated. But it was all a story in my head that did not involve this actual little human being who had come into the world with his own path and purpose. Yeah. And when I was then confronted with having a baby who did not at all want to move through the world that way, I was extremely fortunate about two things very early on. One was that when I got pregnant, a dear friend introduced me to a midwife, and I was able to have my babies at home and be completely out of everything about that system from the beginning with my babies. And the other was that when my older child was really little and was awake all night and colicky and crying and I was losing my mind, I found a group of veteran moms who pointed me to, among other things, the work of Byron Katie, who's a spiritual leader. But her view of the world, she has a tool that allows you to recognize that nothing, that everything is your own story, and that whatever everybody else and everything else in the world is doing is exactly what they are and it is supposed to be doing. And my job was to just figure out where I was supposed to be. And so because I knew that my infant child was not trying to upset me or keep me awake at night, that he was just meeting, trying to get his own needs met, I entered deeply into this process of self-exploration because I knew I wanted to be a different kind of mother. And I have a concept that I now call the ancestral dump truck, but I didn't have that, that framework then. But because I wanted to do this right, I knew it was the most important thing I was ever going to do. I threw myself into it like it was this little person in front of me was the most powerful and wise and brutal spiritual teacher I was ever going to have. And I let him transform me. And that's when I realized that I had been the architect of all of my problems. And it wasn't my fault, per se, because I'd come in with a bunch of stuff in the back of the ancestral dump truck, but it was within my power to start to excavate that and to, you know, take the wheel a little bit. That was really the thing that turned my life around, was when my first child was born. And I thought, I'm going to do this right. And I don't know how, and I'm going to surrender to the knowledge that I don't know how, and I'm going to sit at the feet of this master, and I'm going to learn.
I find, Sarah, one of the things, and it's a beautiful picture that you use as to your son being that master and that teacher, and this picture about ancestral things that follow us. I believe that every family carries that ancestral genes. And there's always someone in that family that will have an opportunity to do some shifting, as we talked about early, that when that shifting happens in you, can affect many of the other generation, because the shifting in the previous generation affected you. And I think every family member has one that has the opportunity to do some shifting, if you will. So as you move through life, Sarah, and you begin to recognize that it's you, and you begin to see some of those things, what were some of those tools that we have out there in the world that you began to bring into your space to assist you to become even more centered and aware and progress in your life as this individual now that is noticing a few things about her as her master is excavating them and bringing them in front of her face?
Yeah. The biggest one for a long time was the work of Byron Katie, which is this simple system of inquiry where you question your thoughts. And by going through this process of questioning your thoughts, you find at the end what she calls the turnaround, where you find at least four completely opposite stories that can be true. And that tool, just applying that tool over and over again, and combined with just having to be present with the needs of my child, and every time I felt activated by what was going on, to say, every time that activation happens, this is a temple bell. This is a temple bell ringing me home, bringing me back to this practice. And just to keep it simple with that and say, let me assume that this is exactly how it's supposed to be, and figure out what it means to be in relation. And then later, after my experience with cancer and the tools that I brought in with my experience with cancer, and then homeopathy, which totally changed my life and shifted my whole energetic dynamic even more. I've brought in also a lot of the work of Gay Hendricks, Gay and Katie Hendricks, you know, Pema Chodron's writing, and I read the Tao Te Ching, and I just have so many advisors. That's the core of those tools, is those tools that are about inquiring into What am I believing? What happens when I believe that? And where am I in relation to the center right now in terms of these beliefs? And what can I do to use this to my advantage and to belong here instead of being at war with here?
Now I wanted to lead in. So I wanted to, the reason why I asked that, I wanted to see the genesis, if you will, to where it began, that internal dialogue began within you, because you are now going to be walking through some personal stuff, if you will. You are navigating and you're heading towards your personal stuff, or your serious journey as you began. As you're walking there, guide us to that piece as to that first day when you heard that news, and then your internal reaction, because that is very important. And I want people to listen to this, because I know I can ask this question of Sarah before she even tells me about it, because it was that internal decision that caused her to navigate where she is today. It's very important that you guys pay attention, because this is where you can win or lose. Sarah, invite us to that day, if you will, that information, that additional information came to you that says, wait a minute, there's something within you, your body, your house, that is causing tremendous amount of discomfort, if you will. Invite us to that.
Yeah, sure. So the way that that diagnosis even happened was that my younger son, I then had two children. So this, my kids were, my older child was 4 at this time. My younger son was 8 months old. And he was having frustrating teething situation. And I took him to an osteopath, very straightforward kind of situation. But it was at an integrative practice. And I had not been sleeping well, and I had not been feeling well. And I thought maybe I had mono. And so I had some blood work done while I was there, because it was, they had a bunch of different kinds of practices. And I thought maybe I have mono. And then I get this phone call and they said, we'd like you to come in. You don't have mono. And I pushed on that. And I said, well, what's wrong? What do I need to do? And they said, we think you have leukemia. And my first reaction to that was to say, okay, thank you for that information. I'm going to go sit with that and figure out what to do. And they were in this paradigm of urgency. We need you to come in right now. We want you to go to the hospital through the ER. That's like a straight to inpatient. Do not pass go. These numbers are very, very scary to us. You should be in a panic about this. That was not my reaction. My first reaction was to say, okay, I'm going to go figure this out. Thank you for that information. And that's the contrarian in me. That wasn't some deeply centered identity as much as it was, you're telling me I have to do this, and so I'm not going to. But when I did that, so I had that reaction. And then I was stunned for a while. I initially, my belief was, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to figure this out naturally. I'm going to do this without going into the medical system. But the reason that I had that bias was because I had a story about myself and the way that I move through the world, which involved, I don't go into the medical system. I never had been afraid of cancer, but I always had, and I was very naturally minded, and we're living in the country and our lifestyle was so organic. And I thought, but I also had this story. Well, if I got diagnosed with cancer, I'd never do chemo. I'd do an alternative. I'd be fine. These people are all wrong. And so that was a story I was inhabiting. It was my identity. It wasn't a question of having a clarity of understanding about the heart of healing. It was an oppositional thing. I'm not going to. And so, of course, after a week of trying to figure this out myself, and what do you do for leukemia, and trying to pull all these resources together, and having conversation with, actually met a lovely oncologist who's probably most of the reason that I made the decision that I made, because he was a very rare breed of oncologist. He's a Catholic doctor at a Catholic hospital. And he said, you're in charge of this, and I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. I trust that you know your body better than I do, but here's what I see, and here's what I think would be the right thing to do based on my expertise. And so that was a very non-threatening way to invite me to consider this possibility. And it was when I sat down at the dinner table, and I've got these young children, a baby who's still nursing, and my husband, and I was still kind of having this arrogance, like, well, I'm not going to let this beat me. I'm not going to let this kill me. And my husband broke down and he turned to me with tears in his eyes and he said, can you promise me that? And I thought, who am I doing this for? Is this my story of my ego, or am I going to surrender to what I'm supposed to do right now and take responsibility for the deeper journey here? And so I checked myself into the hospital and I said, everything that I'm trying to do to heal myself of cancer is, and I didn't know these words then, but is actually the mindset of cancer trying to be in control. And what I need to do is surrender. And what surrender looks like is putting myself in exactly the place I am most hostile and afraid to be in. Yeah. And that was transformative for me. That turned out to be my medicine. The fact that I've become a practitioner of this natural modality, which I believe accesses the deeper part of the healing process, I became this because I did that. And it's a unique way to approach it. I had to deconstruct the story of my identity of I'm natural in order to truly become whole.
In my readings of books and ancient books, I came across this book that talked about, because of my background is Christianity, I came across this book, Jubilees and the Book of Enoch. Within those words, those pages, is a story about where all of the sicknesses and diseases and the cures of them were written in there. There was a book about the cures of all the ailments and diseases for man by herbs, medicine. They found some of these books. They found in the Dead Scroll, the Essenes was a sect that gone to that data, if you will. They're finding some of them. There's a gentleman that is, his team are trying to get all of that information and put it together for us all, but it's an herbal thing, a treatment for all. But the world, the natural world, they have developed the healthcare system. I've seen the healthcare system kill thousands of people. I'm from that system, so I know the things that go on. But there's some good there. There's some good people there that are can use that technology or the current stuff coupled with the holistic piece. They'll be able to guide us, you know, but they'll give us that. I know a few of them, Sarah, that lean towards the holistic. They're in this field and they have to manage it, if you will. And you know what I'm talking about when you have to learn how to manage it, because once they find out certain things, they'll be able to penalize that individual. But here you are. You now got this news. You surrendered and you're now beginning this new journey. You're there. Began to, as you said, began to be deconstructed. While we were there, Sarah, deconstruction, what did it look like? And how did you able to manage yourself there?
Yeah. Well, so the treatment for acute myeloid leukemia of the type that I had is inpatient. So I was in the hospital, in a hospital bed, which is, you know, pretty unusual these days to actually be, you know, admitted and staying in the hospital. And I had to go back. So I went in initially and I was there for quite a while, very, very sick. And then after that, they would send me home for a little while and then they'd have me come back for a week. And I called them my meditation retreats because I had otherwise been full time at home with one and then two young children for 4 years at that point. So here I was in this situation where I didn't feel good, but there was also nobody asking anything of me, which meant I had to get really real with who I was when I was by myself. And I had never been okay with who I was when I was by myself. And I learned to be by myself. And I learned, and I was so uncomfortable physically that I had to learn to channel all of my energy into wherever the pain was. Mm-hmm. So that's when I first learned to do that. And so then I could later do that also for mental and emotional pain, channel my energy into a, I'm giving you my full attention. I remember having a conversation with cancer, and it was my first admit, and I was in the hospital, and I said, how can I meet your need? What is your need here with me that I can address so that we both can move on from this without it being the end of my life? And I would just sit with that question. And if I could read, if I had the cognitive ability to read, I would read. There was a book I read by Lewis Mel Madrona called Narrative Healing that was about the way in which we can find healing through our stories. But a lot of the time I would just lie there and I would just ask this question without looking for an answer. How can I, what is it you're asking of me? How can I meet your need? In the same way that you would ask of a child, how can I understand what your need is when you don't have the language to tell me? And that was my process, that was my process for months and months and months. And it gave me the ability to do that. And I would not have learned that if I had spent all of my time focusing on how can I manage and solve the problem of cancer, which was completely the wrong way to think about what cancer is and what it was doing in my body.
As you were moving through, Sarah, and you were there oscillating back home, hospital, back and home, and you began to look deep into yourself and having these questions and asking them and allowing yourself to identify and become one with the pain, to understand the reasoning behind. As you're moving through, what began to change in your life that caused you to go on that road to obtaining your quote-unquote healing? What was those steps that began to take place in you once you got there? Because I know once you got there, you realize, wait a minute, I can now serve from here. You got there. How did you begin to put the pieces to begin to become a servant? What was that road that looked like when you held that oscillating back and forth? When did you get off that train? How did you do that with the knowledge that you were gaining from having reading and all the other people coming into your space?
So the whole process took 4 or 5 years. And when I was first introduced to homeopathy when I first went into the hospital. I didn't know anything about it, but I had been introduced in a serendipitous way to a homeopath. And she came to see me in the hospital. I never did homeopathic treatment before I went in, but she came to see me in the hospital. And the process of that case-taking process was not like anything I'd ever experienced before. It was very deep. It was about where was I in my story? How were my symptoms showing up as part of an overall dynamic? And one of the things, so I would say the biggest thing that being in the hospital did for me and that surrendering to going to the hospital did for me, and again, this was this four-year process that ultimately culminated in a bone marrow transplant, was that I had to let go of dogma because my story about what had to be true turned out to not be true. But it still took me a long time of discovery through the process of, I had the homeopath, and then I saw her a few times, but my mindset about that was still on the level of, okay, I know that chemo is damaging to my body and I want to heal myself from the chemo. And so I'm looking at healing. That was still a material level of thinking about healing. I didn't understand that what I was actually going through was a spiritual transformation. I didn't really understand. And so I got out of the hospital and I got better. And then I got sick again because I went back into some of my same old patterns of trying to force myself, instead of into the old way of my being thinking, forcing myself into another new mindset. And I'm going to live life to the fullest, but in a really aggressive way. Like, I'm lucky to be alive and I'm going to do all the things. And that was also not who I am. I need more space. I need more flow. Yeah. So of course I relapsed. When that happened, it was like a koan. It clicked. I realized, oh, you are not getting the message. Yeah. There is a message here, and you are going to go through this meditation retreat for as long as you have to go through it until you get that message. And then I started to heal. And that was when everything really turned around. So early in the process, I understood that I had to let go of dogma, but I didn't actually do it until much later in the process.
Always the case. It's hard to let go of dogma. It's a part of us. And we have to come to that place of surrender. And I tell people this, that place is a painful place. Because I use the example of Jesus. And again, I came out of the church and I remember this area. He's in this garden and he has to surrender. And he's arguing with his father. He's like, I don't want to do this. I don't know about this. I'm not sure I want to do this. I'm not sure about this. That conversation from my readings and my studies says that this individual was sweating blood from that conversation of surrendering. Eventually he says, okay, I'll do it. One of us has come to a space by which we are sweating blood. I've never sweat blood where I put my hand and see it, but I could testify of some of the pain, but not like that. That place is an interesting place, I think, Sarah. A lot of our power is from there. It's from that area of surrendering that went to die and change the world. All of us have to come to that place of surrendering. And when we get there, I believe everything lies there, Sarah. I really do. I think our peace, our healing, strength, we live right there. And so once we get there, it's an introduction to ourselves as to who we are and the assignment that we have to do. And I think that surrendering is important because it does really truly lead us to our assignment to get accomplish what we need to do. So here you are, got it. And you stated that your healing began to take place. Your healing has taken place and you're looking at yourself. Did you see? And how did you react to that seeing, if you will?
Yeah. And I think I realized this fairly early, but I didn't fully form the narrative around it. I remember crying on the way to the hospital in gratitude when I was very first admitting myself. On some level, I remember that I knew this was a gift. I really did. And when you think about, think about the story of Jesus, and even still, Jesus, he's on the cross, and still in that moment, again, he thinks he's been forsaken. Yeah. And when you realize we're never forsaken, there's this supernova that goes off. I came to understand that what I think of as the shamanic journey, and when I did work with the Karo shamans, there's a framework for Karo shamanism, but from that is powerful and meaningful. Yeah. But for me, the shamanic journey, the way I understand it is, and Jesus certainly went through a shamanic journey. The Buddha went through a shamanic journey. When you travel in the dark, when I think of the ancestral dump truck, that it's like you come in with a certain amount of stuff in the ancestral dump truck, and then it's a big, heavy truck. Over the course of your life, you're putting your own stuff into it. And as you say, certain generations, certain person, whatever time, and for it, I was fortunate enough that was me, that truck hits the curb. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, that whole load keeps moving and yeah. you're buried. And now yeah. you're shoveling out yeah. because you got to get out of the cab. And that trip in the dark, that is where we gain our wisdom. It's the mm-hmm. greatest gift we can receive is to travel in the dark without knowing whether or not we're going to get to the other side, and just trusting that we're not forsaken. And that movement in the dark, and then coming out on the other side and finding out what was on the other side. And then, of course, it goes on and on and on. There's no there there.
Yeah.
Was for me this moment of understanding. If I can be of service, if I could be of service in the world in any way, it would be to have to be a vector, a conduit for the innate wisdom that everyone has access to fall on our knees in gratitude every time we're in pain, because that portal is open and we can step through it. And that is the most powerful, it's like a superpower to be able to move through life with that. And I would not have had that if I hadn't had, I mean, really close, you know, a couple of times for sure, I may not survive this kind of moments. And that I had to go to that place to be like, have I been forsaken? And to find out that no, we're never forsaken.
I had to answer that question. Someone on a podcast that I had, he said, about being forsaken. And I said, you're not forsaken. You may think so. You may even come to a place where you may believe so. That's not the truth. It is simply where you are. But the truth is you are not. And that's a powerful place to be. You talked about the dumps. All of those places are powerful places. And all of you who are listening to this conversation with Sarah and I, and you may have received that news in your life, that life-changing news. Someone that received those life-changing news as well. And she has a story as to her way out. And that's why Threads of Enlightenment exists, because I want to show there's that there is a way out. Through conversation, you can talk to people. And when you come into their space, because they've been through some dark places and dumping, using their shovel to find their way and their compass, can assist you in bringing you out a little faster so that they can show you some places that you didn't know exist. And so I want to invite you guys to Sarah's site. I'm going to put everything that she has there, all the links and stuff, so that you can get to her, because you need people who have gone through the forest, as I said many times. Because it can be a dark place. But I want you guys to know that are listening, you're not alone. There's someone that has a compass and knows how to guide you. So Sarah, here you are. Out, you recognize that you must serve through this venue, this way. And that how did you, because I know we all, even though we go through it, we take it and we begin to change it to adapt it to our personality, to make it palatable so that it is us when we are standing there presenting this new format of revelation that is came through us. How did you begin to put those things together to create what you have today as a way by which you serve?
Yeah. So I had my training as a classical homeopath in the this 200 plus year tradition as a classical homeopath. But I built around that what I call a shamanic coaching program, because the process of homeopathy, homeopathy is such a powerful modality. And when we are seen in the homeopathic process, when we are met with the homeopathic remedy, it speaks to the vital force on a level that allows the vital force to start to shift into this place of being on true purpose. But that's not a magic bullet. That's not the only thing. The container that our healing lives in, especially when, and I speak from deep personal experience, this whole armature, we've built an armature around ourselves that's around a self that's not the right alignment, to be able to take someone, whether it's what looks like a more traditional kind of coaching where I'm helping. The unique nature of the kind of coaching that I do is that we use the symptoms, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, to get to the metaphor. And then we use that metaphor to understand what is asking to be healed. And in moving through what is asking to be healed, we get to unlock all these patterns. And then sometimes we're using journey work. Sometimes we're using meditation. Sometimes we're using what looks like conventional coaching. It's completely individualized. And everything is on the template of what is asking to be healed in you. And so that I'm getting to that. I don't have a bias or a dogma about what is asking to be healed in the person sitting in front of me. They're going to tell me, and my job is to help bring it forward and then to be their navigator on that healing journey, both with homeopathic remedies and with this container of shamanic coaching. So that's how that process works. One of the things that I did not put in my links, but that you can access, is you can schedule a free call with me. And that's a no pressure, no obligation phone call. You can also put, when you go to my website, if you put in /free, you can get a free download to a guide and a sample of some aspects of the shamanic coaching program. And I am available in so many ways to communicate with people about where they are in their process. But it is totally free to schedule a phone call with me and to talk about what is showing up in your life as pain. And can we use that as a pathway to healing, both through this incredibly powerful modality of homeopathy and then through this unique program that I have created.
I love it. Guys, we're going to provide everything for Sarah, as I mentioned, so that you can get access into her space, because pain is not something that you want to live with if you can come out of it. I've been there physically, all the other things. My story is I had physically died as well. So I know some of the stories and stuff like that that you guys had done. But we're going to provide everything that Sarah has so that you can get in her space, so that you get your journey out. Sarah, it has been an honor to have you here at Threads of Enlightenment. I am so excited. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much. This has been just lovely and powerful, Ken. I really appreciate you having this platform and inviting me on it.